Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Fangirl Podcast. It has been a minute. I feel like I say that every time, but it's turns out recording a podcast takes a lot of time and things have been kind of crazy here lately. But I'm very glad we are back on the air tonight with a new friend that we've just met recently through UMass Boston and our graduate program. And I'm very excited about our topic tonight. We're going to be talking tonight about Slater Kinney. Really awesome indie rock, punk rock band from late 90s, West Coast, Seattle. And I'm really excited to chat about them. This is kind of a departure from the artists that I usually talk about. I usually talk a lot about pop artists, but I think it's going to be a really good conversation. So welcome everybody to the show. And I want to welcome our guest, Alan. He is a, student, classmate of mine in the UMass Boston program. And he also has a podcast of his own, and he's a big fan of Slater Kinney. So welcome, Alan, to the show.
Thank you so much, Liz, for having me. Yes, I'm a big fan of girl groups in general. And I, when you told me that you have this podcast, I was thrilled to get a chance to be on. So happy to be here talking Slater Kinney.
Yes, so excited to talk about this band tonight. And Alan, I know that you have a podcast as well. So tell me a little bit more about your podcast. How did you get into the podcasting world?
Sure. So I can give a little bit of background. I am on a podcast. Primarily, my main show is called Chats, a television podcast. That's CHATZ: a television podcast. We're on most social media platforms and stuff right now as Peaks Chats. That's what we're called on iTunes because we're covering Twin Peaks. And we are a television rewatch, first time watch podcast. And my best friend Majal and I, we've been doing it for about 6 years now. And basically, we watch two episodes of cult classic TV shows every week. And we just kind of talk about them. We go down the funny parts, the sad parts, the thoughtful parts. And we, you know, just kind of talk way too much into microphones and people occasionally tell us that we're good at it. So that's my current big show.
Love that. That's awesome. And you've been doing this for 6 years.
Yeah, it was so late 2015 or so, I was watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer for the first time. And Majel and I just, our friendship has always been centered around podcasts. We bonded in like seventh grade over podcasts. And I was like, hey, do you want to watch Buffy with me? And the funny story we always like to tell people about chats is we were doing a podcast format before we were doing it. Like we were recording things. We would get on Skype and we would like talk about the episodes as if we were doing a podcast, just kind of for fun. And then we said, well, what if we just recorded this and like put it online and produced it? And that's how we got to where we are today. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you're a veteran of the podcasting world. You've been at it for 6 years. That's huge.
It goes by really fast, honestly. Like you and I have spoken before how it can be kind of thrilling, exciting, addicting, whatever you want to call it, to just get your thoughts out there and get feedback in real time in a way. So yeah. I love it.
Awesome. I love that. I think I'm just coming up on my 1 year anniversary of podcasting. And I agree. It's been such a blast. It's been so much fun. It's been, you know, years gone by so quickly and I'm just really loving it so far. So it's a drug. It's a gateway drug to something. I don't know what, but definitely been a lot of fun so far.
Absolutely. It's a gateway drug to talking with your friends about things that you care about. Maybe we can say that.
Exactly. Exactly. I have a lot of friends who also love music, but maybe not quite as much as I do. So I find that podcasting is a gateway drug into, meeting other like-minded people who love talking about the subject matter. And I've actually made some friends through podcasting. So it's been a really cool thing to get into. I think the pandemic really, you know, got me a lot more interested in podcasting in general. And it's been just so much fun to work on this podcast. So,
yeah.
So speaking of podcasts, let's jump into it. So tonight we're talking about Slater Kinney and very excited to chat about this band. It's not a band that I would listen to that often on my own. You know, I'm kind of aware of the band. I know Carrie Brownstein, of course, from Portlandia, which is a show that I absolutely love. But Slater Kinney hasn't really been on my radar in the past couple of years. So I'm excited to learn more about them and talk a bit more about their work. I've always kind of been roughly aware of them, but have never really been a big fan. So I'm excited to hear your perspective as a fan of this band. I'm excited to talk a bit more about the music and dive into some of the songs as well. So when did you first hear about the band Slater Kinney? Do you have any memories of hearing their songs or specific place where you were, or what was that experience like for you hearing their music for the first time?
Yeah. So I have an interesting relationship with them as well. Similar to you, I knew of Carrie Brownstein from Portlandia. And then I think it was, they were on hiatus for a few years, or Sleater-Kinney was for like over a decade at that point. And mm-hmm. it was around the time of the album No Cities to Love, which was in 2015, that I got back into them in a meaningful way, or got into them in a meaningful way. I was listening to their music pretty regularly with that album, and then I went back and listened to most of their old stuff. I can't be on this podcast without shouting out my very good friend Ryan, who was a big factor in getting me into Sleater-Kinney, as well as Twin Peaks, coincidentally. Part of the reason that they're actually joining us as a guest on the current season of Chats. Nice. They are the biggest Sleater-Kinney fan I know. They've seen them in concert, memorized lyrics, big fan of a lot of their music, acknowledging their ups and downs. And since then, you know, I listened to Carrie Brownstein's autobiography, which is really great. Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl, and really enjoyed that. There's a lot of great Sleater-Kinney insight in that if you like the band and want to learn about them. And yeah, I mean, I acknowledge and respect their importance to the 90s and 2000s rock scene overall, and also the Riot Girl movement. So really influential band, you know, really important to a lot of the artists that we have today, even though you and I tend to be more in the, I'd say, greater pop and pop rock fandoms. Yeah, definitely. It's great to rediscover Sleater-Kinney, as I got to do as part of preparing for this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. So you heard about Sleater-Kinney through a friend, through Ryan.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. Do you remember hearing, like, what was the first song that you heard by them, or what did you think when you first heard about this music?
Yeah, so Carrie Brownstein has a really distinctive voice, right? That's the first thing you notice, especially a distinctive singing voice. Yeah. And that was the first thing that I remember, is being like, whoa, that's the Portlandia lady has a beautiful voice. That's like really specific and memorable. And I'm sure you listen to any Sleater-Kinney song from any era, and you'll recognize that. And her harmonies with bandmate Corin Tucker are really great as well. But I think No Cities to Love, the title track on that album, honestly, is just constantly in my head. I know it's a little bit passe to be like, I like their newer stuff, but I also appreciate their older stuff a lot. And they've run the gamut, I'd say, between really, really political stuff and big Riot Girl feminist movement stuff. And also, like, something I noticed, this is just an interesting observation. So they have, I think it's 10 albums as of this recording. They just put one out this year, actually, The Path of Wellness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on Chats, on our Patreon, we'll talk about music here and there. And we covered two other bands that were formed about 20 years ago. They were Bare Naked Ladies and Metric. And they both have about 10 albums as well.
That's a throwback. Bare Naked Ladies.
Hell yeah. Metric's my favorite band. Bare Naked Ladies is Majon's favorite band. So that's why we did that. Mm-hmm. But they, all three of these bands were formed in the 90s and have the like very similar arcs in their music, where they started out like kind of grungy, kind of weird, a little quirky, but like they found their style, and then they nailed it by the second or third album. And then probably by album 8 or 9, it's like, okay, your production is really great, but all they really want to write about nowadays is like, we hate Trump and everybody's on their phones too much. Like, you get old, you know. it's a sad truth of listening to The Center Won't Hold, their 2019 album.
I mean, this band is right at my alley. Like,
yeah. You're like in the demographic exactly.
Yeah, I think I really am. Yeah.
So sure. It's pretty funny, like listening to so much of it in a row and hearing like talking about existentialism and all this big stuff about being a woman and being queer women in the rock scene. And then like their modern stuff is just so like, the production is so good. I think one of their most recent albums was produced by St. Vincent, actually.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then it's like, but the lyrics are still just like, okay, you guys are getting old, and that's fine. It's valid. I'm okay with people getting old, but it's just, they've run the gamut.
Well, you know what? They're like, I think it's funny you say that, because you're right. They started out, formed the band in Olympia, Washington. They both went to college together in Washington, and really started touring a lot on the West Coast in the late 90s. And they were really a big part of that late 90s post-punk, punk rock kind of West Coast vibe. You know, I'm going to assume they were heavily influenced by like Nirvana. Just going to throw that out there. Another West Coast great grunge rock band.
I mean, they opened for Pearl Jam at one point in the aughts. So, Pearl Jam. You know, the influence is all there.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And it's funny how like those like West Coast kind of like grunge rock bands kind of stick together, you know, Pearl Jam, Slater-Kinney. Anyway, right. I digress. But it's funny how they started off as, you know, like a punk rock band. And now, as you mentioned, they're singing songs about existentialism and how they hate Trump and how people are on their phones all the time. I get it. I totally get it. They're like, you know, middle-aged women from the West Coast. If I was in their shoes, I'd probably be singing about the same exact things.
Right. Absolutely.
I might be singing about how, like, you know, they're out of kombucha at my favorite Whole Foods as well. Maybe that's part of their writing repertoire. I don't know, but I'm going to make an assumption and say that that's probably, you know, what they're singing about the tracks, you know?
Yes. And their arc has changed a lot, you know, like I said, and those first two albums, Slater-Kinney and Call the Doctor, are just Carrie Brownstein and Corin. Mm-hmm. And then it was around the third album, Dig Me Out, that they brought on Janet Weiss, who helped co-write a lot of their best songs and their best albums. And she's also been she was the drummer for the group for most of it. She's no longer in the group. Mm-hmm. And Dig Me Out, it's funny that you mentioned Nirvana, feels kind of like their Nevermind. It's their like, this is when we're popular. This is when people are hearing about us and we're being played on the radio and all of that stuff. It's usually, yeah, around the second or third album. Mm-hmm. So then you get around to like, the Hot Rock and then All Hands on the Bad One, which is a lot of like, it's like the cool album. I love All Hands on the Bad One. I think it's fantastic, but it's underappreciated. And by that point, they are already writing about being famous. And they're like, we're exhausted by this. It's super frustrating. You know, we're trying to be more than just like a girl rock group. And we want to just be considered like a good rock group. You know, we're doing the thing that everyone else is doing.
Yeah. And I think that's totally on point. Like, Carrie and Corin, you know, they seem like the kind of people that don't care a lot about fame. They don't care about the red carpets. It seems like they're just really dedicated to their music and to their art, and everything else is kind of fluff. You know, like if you Google Carrie Brownstein, you'll see more of her work about Portlandia and you'll see Slater-Kinney, but the band is, you know, I'm going to make an assumption here and just say they're not a household name. They're not that well known. And I think they're probably okay with that. You know, they don't seem like the type of people that really are in it for the fame or the fortune. It seems like they're just two artists who are really dedicated to their music and their craft and want to just keep doing what they're doing. And I think I have more respect for artists like that, because it seems like, you know, they're not distracted by the glitz and the glamour and the Hollywood lifestyle. And it seems like they're much more focused on just putting their heads down and getting to work. And I really respect that about musicians. And that's one of the reasons why I'm just like drawn to this band. They're awesome.
Yeah. I think there was an interview with them a little while back where they said, quote, "Music has always been the playground of men's sexuality." And I think about that a lot when I listen to their lyrics, especially in their like early to mid era, because Carrie and Corin like are two very confident and like cool women who just understand the industry that they're getting into, right? They're like, this is a male dominated industry where they get to talk about sex and and about life and about violence and all this stuff. And like, we're absolutely allowed to do that. And we're trying to normalize it. We need to kick the ball forward and take what we were influenced by and move it forward.
Yeah. I think that's so on point. Like, I feel like these women, especially women in like kind of punk rock scenes, they're much more not caring as much about what other people think of them. And I really appreciate that about this type of music. It's much more in your face. It's not their music, it's not pretty pop songs. They're not making videos to appeal to the masses. They're doing their own thing. And I really respect that about an artist, because I think there probably is a lot of pressure to appeal to a large commercial base. But it seems like Slater-Kinney, they're in their lane, they know their lane, and they're staying in their lane. And I respect that for them. And that's not to say that they haven't taken chances creatively, but it seems like they know who they are and they're really sticking to that and not caring about what other people think. So I definitely respect that about them a lot.
And they were coming out in a time when the industry just, like, it seems pretty standard nowadays to be like, oh, it's a girl rock group. Like, that's great. We love that now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in 1996, one of the most famous things that happened with Slater-Kinney in the news was, I believe it was Spin Magazine put out an article that revealed to the, basically did their coming out for them. and revealed that Carrie and Corin had dated briefly at the beginning of Sleater-Kinney, which is a really fucked up thing to do, obviously. Yes. You can't come out on behalf of other people, especially when they didn't choose to. And that kind of defined their career. It's like, well, when we tried to become big in the media, they took our narrative and made it for us. So like, we want to control our own story. And I always try to keep that in mind when I think about how, like, not poppy, but more generic some of their modern stuff is, like, because it's at the very least they're in control of it. And whatever you feel about it, they're making music. They're, you know, it's hard to make 10 albums that are all extremely, like, unique and bespoke, you know, like, I think.
Yeah. And what an incredible career. Like, yeah. And out, that's a lot of work over the past, what, 15, 20 years that they've put out. And that's even with like a 10-year hiatus in there as well.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's been multiple periods where they wanted to, where they considered breaking up. And obviously, as I mentioned, Janet is no longer in the group, which I think has also been a contributing factor in the lyrical quality kind of dipping in recent years, because she just kind of brought a cohesiveness to all of their songwriting. Super talented. And I always try when people talk about Sleater-Kinney to mention that this is not Carrie Brownstein's band. This is Carrie Brownstein, Corin Tucker, and for the majority of it, Janet Weiss as well, are a trio, who are, you know, women doing their thing together as a group. It's not like, yes, Carrie became the famous one because she got into acting and is a funny, talented, multi-talented person, but this is a band of three people. That's now kind of in a weird flux of like two and a half people.
I feel like most bands have weird flux periods where like one person's in the band, someone's not in the band. There's some ambiguity there, but
yeah.
But they've had an incredible career. They've been around since the late 90s. I mean, that is a very long-standing tried and true career. And yeah, it's also interesting that they've also had their own solo ventures as well. So Carrie Brownstein has, of course, been on Portlandia. She's done some writing, some, you know, musical journalism. She's produced other films and other, you know, pieces of work. And Corin Tucker as well. She's also recorded her own music. Yeah. And it's interesting to me that they've had such different varied lives, but they keep coming back to each other. You know, they were on hiatus for 10 years. I mean, which there was no explanation given for the hiatus. People weren't sure if they were going to reunite. They didn't have to reunite. They could have just called it at that point and said, hey, you know, we've had a good career. We're done with this. Let's close the book. But they chose to come back. And I really think that says a lot about their relationship together, their, you know, professional relationship, their musical relationship with each other, their friendship. And I think that really just speaks volumes. You know, maybe in their minds, they thought like, you know, we're not done here. We've got more to say. We've got more to perform. We've got more to complete here. And I think that is, I just love bands that do that. It's like they come back and reunite or do a farewell tour or something. And it's just like, yes, you guys are still hanging on to this. You're still here. You're still giving music to the fans. I love when a band does that. I think it's great.
Yeah. The fact that like that hiatus is not insignificant. If you think about trying to like reconcile with friends you haven't spoken to in 10 years. I mean, just the idea boggles the mind, and not only be friends again with them, but work with them. And, you know, they've had a lot of rough patches. Obviously like Janet's departure was not super smooth. And there was a period where it kind of felt like she was part of the band, but not writing. So, you know, not exactly like they are a perfect, smooth, cohesive unit these days, but I still hope someday to get to see a Sleater-Kinney concert. I think that would, even like today, I think that'd be so awesome.
Yeah. Well, they just released a new album this year.
True.
Maybe they're going to tour next year. What do you think?
I really hope so. I think it's a classic thing people say, like when a band has been around for a while and you got into them late, you go, oh, okay, I wish I could just see them one time so I can say I did it, whether it's like the Stones or, you know, any of those bands who have just like been around for so long. And it's like, okay, I'm sure if I see them today, it's not going to be as exciting as it was in 1980 something, or in the case of Sleater-Kinney in the 90s. But it's still them, you know, it's still the same people. They're playing and a lot of the same songs. I just mentioned to you yesterday after class, actually, that I saw Sylvanesso in concert this recently.
Love Sylvanesso. That must have been a great show.
It was incredible. Yeah, it was my first show back since the pandemic, since like, I think mid 2019, I went to one. And you know, I haven't been hugely into them recently. I like their latest album and I like their last couple albums, but like 2014, 2015 was when I was like big into them. So it still felt like, okay, if I'm going to see them, I might as well see them once now.
Yeah, definitely.
So I feel the same about Sleater-Kinney in terms of seeing them in concert.
I think it's funny how like there's always like that one band you have that like maybe you were behind the curve when it came to jumping on the bandwagon. Maybe like you didn't get into them until you were like maybe older as an adult or out of college or whatever. And at that point, or the point when you get invested in the band is the point where they're like about to retire.
Yeah.
You know, I think that happened to me with like the Rolling Stones and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I got so into those bands after college and during college. And at that point, those bands had already had the bulk of their careers done. I mean, they were already like 5, 6, 10 albums deep into their catalog. So I feel like, you know, in some parts of me just wish I could go back to like 1975 and see the Rolling Stones perform in London, or go back to like 1994 and see the Red Hot Chili Peppers play in Venice Beach. You know, like that was like the era where they were at their peak, you know, and I'm being subjective here. I think early 90s was peak time for Red Hot Chili Peppers. But yeah, I kind of feel the same way about Sleater-Kinney. Like, I feel like they were at their peak. They were really like living their best lives, like late 90s, early 2000s. And now we're catching them towards the, hopefully not the end of their career, but towards the more mature years of their career. Yeah, and a part of me feels a little like, damn, I wish I had a time machine to go back and see them when they were really like, you know, really in it, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a big reason why their latest album, they brought on St. Vincent to help produce a lot of it, was like, let's get somebody who's still pretty popular and is doing a lot of creative stuff, and her style matches with theirs pretty well. She's done a lot of creative work in the music field. So, you know, if you're going to make a new album, you might as well do something special and not just like do one for the sake of doing it, you know, not just to please a label.
Definitely.
That's always been the Sleater-Kinney vibe. But I'm curious, Liz, like just to flip the interview role for a second, of what you've listened to so far, were there any particular standouts, whether they be albums overall, eras, songs, lyrics even?
Ooh, that is a great question. Okay, so again, so I'm not super familiar with them, but I've been listening to them for the past couple of days, and you know, can't go wrong with Modern Girl. That is an awesome song. When I first heard it, I was like, this is garbage. I don't like this. It's so different to what I would typically listen to. But after hearing it a few times, I'm like, no, this is like absolutely brilliant and it's genius. And I'm a big fan of Modern Girl.
Yeah.
So don't judge a song by its first play is the moral of the story, because songs can grow on you. But I really like Modern Girl. Wanna Be Your Joey Ramone is great.
Classic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I love the hits. The hits are great. I have not yet dug into the Path of Wellness album. It's their most recent record. I haven't gotten onto this one just yet, but I do want to check this out. Looks like a really interesting album. Have you spent much time with this record yet?
With the new one, not so much, but definitely what I've heard, if you've listened to a lot of St. Vincent, like I have, you can super hear the influence and the, you know, the production there. But none of it has really blown me away. What I did to get ready for this podcast was I listened to a playlist on Spotify that just brings in all of their biggest songs. It's not just their most listened to, but it's kind of a selection from every album. And so the couple on there that I heard from the new album, I was like, yeah, I'm not offended by this. I'm not like, this is actually bad. I honestly often struggle telling when I don't like a song. You know, people always tell me like, what music are you into? And I'm like, oh, I like most of the things I listen to, which is like, kind of not, it's like, you don't have taste. You just have no, like, you're just flatly like, I like everything.
Yeah.
But truthfully, I think I can tell the difference between like, I know I like it less than The Woods, which is the album that Modern Girl is on. But I think it's more interesting sonically, like the production of it is just really unique. That's kind of how I feel about the new one.
Yeah,
it's funny that you mentioned Modern Girl, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you, but that it's classic because it does one of my favorite things that people do in rock music, where the music is saccharine and really like nice, but the lyrics are not. Or in this case, they're ironic, because Modern Girl is like, you know, my baby loves me, I'm so happy, and happy makes me a modern girl, and like happiness and being a nice woman these days means like I watch TV and I spend my money and I love everything. And it's like clearly meant to be fully ironic. Like, you know, you're listening to Sleater-Kinney. They're joking about this. And that's actually where the title of Carrie Brownstein's autobiography comes from. which is "Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl" in the second verse. So
I love that you brought that up, because irony is the word that I've been looking for to describe their music. It is like that song especially is very ironic, because the lyrics are very like, yeah, I'm very happy. My baby makes me a modern girl. And it's the lyrics are pretty optimistic, but the music itself is, it's like pretty hard driving. It's pretty grungy. It's pretty dark. It's a little abrasive at first when you first listen to the song, but it's an interesting contrast, because you have this music where the lyrics are so cheerful and perky. Like if you were reading the lyrics on a piece of paper, you would think this was like a beautiful love song. But then you hear the music and you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, what kind of love is this? What kind of relationship is this? What kind of girl is this?
And it's fun. Well, cause that song, even on the album, it's the nicest song on the album. Like it's actually, it has a harmonica for freak's sake. Like it's, it's them kind of being like, we're going to do a little ditty that makes you smile and laugh, but it's really like in the context of the album, I'd say even more than the song itself, you know, that this is not just like, I love being a woman.
It's an interesting contrast. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not quite what you'd expect from just based on the lyrics alone, but it's a great song. Yeah.
That song comes right after a song that means a lot to me and my friend Ryan as well, Jumpers, which is a song about committing suicide off of the Golden Gate Bridge, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's a super, super dark song, like explicitly and actually and not ironically. So I think Sleater-Kinney very much acknowledged that like people are listening to our whole album. They're not listening. There are singles, and it's great that there are singles, but it's Jumpers into Modern Girl on purpose. You know what I mean? So they knew how to play with tone really well across their albums.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting. I think, you know, like you mentioned, like people listen to all the songs on the album. It seems like Sleater-Kinney has a very devoted fan base, and of course they're releasing songs as singles, but based on what I know about Sleater-Kinney fans, they're not listening for the singles. They're listening for the full albums. And the full albums, I think, are a lot more cohesive, and they're a lot more, they kind of portray a better picture, I think, of the entire scope of their work. And I feel like the band itself and their fans, it's almost like cult status of a following. Yeah. You know, like Sleater-Kinney fans are like really hardcore fans. You know, you don't really find a casual Sleater-Kinney fan, as far as I've seen.
If you're into them, you're really into them. Is what
yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think you kind of have to be, because their music, it's not
put it on your radio. It's not put it on your radio and hang out with your friends' music.
It's not highly commercialized. It's not a Taylor Swift pop song. You know, it is, it's very niche. That's maybe niche is a good word for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, very niche. Cool. So I'm curious if you could find any artist to collaborate with Sleater-Kinney, who would be your dream artist to collaborate with Sleater-Kinney?
Oh, that one's tough. That's definitely tough. It's funny that my brain jumps to obviously like modern artists, because there's something cursed in my head that wants to say Billie Eilish. I think she could do something fun with them. It would be a little weird, a little bit mysterious. My personal dream, because Metric is still around. They've both been big since the 90s. If Emily Haynes did a song with Sleater-Kinney, I would be done. That'd be a wash, because Metric's my favorite band. So I would be in heaven if they could do work together. And I think they could. I mean, Emily Haynes does not do like the grunge low tenor voice. She has a notoriously higher pitched voice. Mm. But I think that contrast would be really cool, actually.
That would be awesome. I'm not very well versed with the band Metric. I don't know them that well, but I could see a really high pitched voice over some Carrie Brownstein rock and roll guitar being a really cool thing to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, Sleater-Kinney always has done interesting things with their guitars. Not enough is said about how great of guitarists both Carrie and Korn are.
Yeah.
They don't have a bassist, and so they just tune their guitars much lower than your average band does to simulate a bass. And I think that would work really well with Metric style.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that you would think of?
I've got a laundry list of people, but you know, it's funny you mentioned that they don't have a bassist, and they're two guitars. They're two artists singing, playing guitar. They have a drummer, of course, but it's interesting that they don't have a bassist. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me a little bit of how the Black Keys also don't have a bassist.
Right. Yeah. I forgot.
It's just two guitars and a big drum kit. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And the Black Keys, I think their specialty comes in the different sounds their guitars make. They use a lot of different special effects and different features. They've got that really strong, like, garage rock, you know, a lot of reverb coming out of the amp kind of sound.
Right.
But I think Carrie Brownstein and Corin are similar in some ways to the Black Keys, mm-hmm. just in terms of their band setup. Two guitarists, drum kit, that's it. But I think Sleater-Kinney leans more on the use of, I guess, that pop punk grunge influence, whereas the Black Keys are much more, I think, synth progressive, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
So, yeah, no, definitely. They're innovating in different fields completely.
Definitely, definitely. So some similarities. And, you know, when you mentioned they didn't have a bassist, I was like, oh yeah, the Black Keys also don't really have a bassist. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to reduce Sleater-Kinney down to a female version of the Black Keys, because that's not fair.
Yeah.
And vice versa. But definitely some similarities there, which is cool. So as for dream artists to collaborate with Sleater-Kinney, I've got a couple that I think would be really good. First of all, I've got to agree with Billie Eilish. Yeah. I think she would just do crazy, amazing things with Sleater-Kinney because she's an incredible songwriter. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, I think Bon Iver would be a really cool collab with Sleater-Kinney.
Yeah. Different vibe, but
totally different vibe.
That's what would work about that. Yeah.
Totally different vibe. I think Bon Iver could bring some really cool songwriting capabilities, some really cool, you know, auras and sounds and vibes. You know, I'm just thinking out loud here, but I think Bon Iver could be a cool collaborator for them. Since you just mentioned this, I think Sylvan Esso would pair really well with Sleater-Kinney. I think that would be a really cool collaboration. And, you know, if Sleater-Kinney is going to provide the music and I could choose the singer for a song, I think I might choose Halsey.
Sure. I mean, yeah, she's got the range. I was thinking, actually, for some reason, that you were going to mention Olivia Rodrigo. I would definitely give her a couple, like several more years, because her voice is still developing and she like has a lot of different styles right now. She's kind of getting to the Avril Lavigne, like more pop punky range. But maybe when her voice, like she can't, this is weird to say, but when she like fleshes out her vocal range a little bit more, she can like do some more work, I think, with Sleater-Kinney, and that would be really cool. Because right now, also those like, that's literally two generations apart.
Totally.
That concert would be buck wild.
Oh yeah. That would be like parents and their Gen Z kids.
Exactly.
I think Olivia Rodrigo could write a great song for Sleater-Kinney, and she's a great voice.
Yeah.
I think that would be such a contrast though. Olivia Rodrigo and Sleater, that's a stretch, but it would be cool. If they're down, it'd be really cool. But yeah, I mean, I guess my mind just immediately goes to like another like indie rock band. So that's why I mentioned Sleater or Sylvan Esso. But I think Billie Eilish would be great. I think Halsey would be incredible. Bon Iver. My usual go-to for this question is Jack Antonoff, because I love Jack Antonoff. And I think as a producer, everything he touches turns to gold. So, but Jack Antonoff might be a little too studio special effects heavy for Sleater-Kinney. So I just, we can dream, Alan, we can dream, but we'll see what happens. Cool. So, so do you have any fun facts about Sleater-Kinney? Have you ever seen them perform live, or, you know, what, when do you listen to them? Like, what kind of, are you, what's your, like your mindset for putting on a Sleater-Kinney record?
That's an interesting question, actually. I can answer that in parts. So I think my like ideal Sleater-Kinney listening scenario is like, I'm feeling really moody after a long day at work. I'm on the way to work and I need to pump up a little bit. I was listening to them when No Cities to Love came out, on the way to class, and being like, all right, let me like hype myself up a little bit. Cause I was big on like, I will listen to music before an exam and I will do better as a result. Like that was my mentality.
Yeah.
Okay. So they kind of get me thinking, but then also it's like, it depends on the album too. Cause that's more All Hands on the Bad One or the Hot Rock or Dig Me Out, like that era. Mm-hmm. But you know, if I want like really just like pensive, like I'm in emo mode stuff, I'll go all the way back. I'll listen to that first album. I don't give a frick. Cause that first album is so, it's so like crunchy And yeah. I know Anthony Fantano, music critic, he likes to say the term crunchy a lot. It definitely sounds crunchy. It's like those shitty amps, and they're just like singing about stuff you can barely hear them.
Yeah.
And I really like that stuff, actually. I think it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to go a little bit hardcore.
Love it. Yeah. And I think like Modern Girl, for example, when I first heard that song, I'm like, this audio quality sucks. But then I'm like,
yeah.
No, maybe that was intentional. Like maybe definitely that was like a part of like the vibe they were going for, mm-hmm. You know? And I think it 100%. Adds to the overall kind of like sense of the song. It kind of puts you in a place where you're like, yeah, like I'm a modern girl. This is it. Like mm-hmm. Gets you a little more in that headspace. But yeah, I think, you know, when I was listening to the songs today, I was at work, and Sleater-Kinney is not a great band to listen to while you're like sending out polite emails to customers, but
sure. You're like, I want to tell this guy to F off. Like you're exactly slamming the keys. Yeah,
exactly. But I would love to see them live. I've heard they put on a really awesome live show. Mm-hmm. I know they've toured a lot of festivals, you know, they've done like South by Southwest. I think seeing them in a smaller venue would be a really cool experience. And I'm hoping they tour. Maybe next year they'll come to Boston.
Yeah, that would be a dream come true, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So I think those are all the questions that I have for you. I think any other thoughts that you have on Sleater-Kinney or any favorite songs you want to shout out here?
No, I've talked about a lot of my favorite stuff. Again, I think my personal favorite is still No Cities to Love. It means a lot to where I was in college. I think it's kind of hard sometimes to separate music from where you were when you first listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a challenging thing with discovering a new band that people like, is you're like, oh, I'm not 13 listening to Sleater-Kinney, I'm 20, whatever.
Yep.
But I love that album very much. I think it's worth going through their discography in order if people are curious, and watching them change and grow, and reading about them, like you were saying, reading about that Spin article and listening to Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl, or reading it. I think the autobiography is actually read by Carrie, which is why I say listen to it, the audiobook, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't think all of their albums are 100% 10 out of 10 bangers, but they have quite a huge body of work and they're really talented. And if you listen to them, you are going to realize that a lot of your favorite rock artists were just straight up inspired by Sleater-Kinney. That's the truth of it.
Totally agree. You mentioned two things. You mentioned sometimes listening to an album takes you back to a time or a place, and it really makes that time or place more special, more significant. Mm-hmm. And I was like that a lot with a lot of bands in college. Like I can't listen to a Red Hot Chili Peppers song and not think about freshman year of college or sophomore year of college. And I think Sleater-Kinney is definitely like that. I haven't quite found my time for Sleater-Kinney yet, but I'm excited to dive in. And I think going into the winter is going to be a great time for me to listen to these kind of more angry kind of grunge rock songs and really just vibe out to them. And yeah, I mean, you're right. They have an incredible body of work and they've been so influential for so many other artists. I'd be willing to bet that a lot of artists that we know and love today in the rock genre or in indie or folk genres were probably really heavily influenced by Sleater-Kinney. So I'm super grateful to them for getting the band back together and producing more music and producing more work that is really, you know, personal to them, but also a lot of their work is social commentary. And mm-hmm. I think that is super important these days. We need artists to say these things on record and produce music that is representative of what they're going through and representative of the times we're living in, because we're living in some crazy times out here, man. So I'm just so grateful to these artists for producing their work and for sharing it with us. So thank you, Sleater-Kinney. Yeah. You guys are the best.
Thank you. Please put out another really political, angry album. You guys have plenty of material. I know you can do it. Give me one.
Yes.
Give me one more. I believe it was, this is corny as hell, but I'm corny as hell. It was Jean-Michel Basquiat who said, art is how we decorate space and music is how we decorate time. And I think that when I consider Sleater-Kinney and how I've listened to him and how I've appreciated them, they decorated a time and place for me and very much defined this like grunge punk era. So That's my thoughts on them.
Could not agree more. I love that quote. I think that's a great place to end. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about Sleater-Kinney. It's been so awesome to talk to you and learn more about your love for this band. And it's been great. So thank you so much, Alan, for joining us. Tell us where we can find your podcast.
Yeah. If you want to listen to me gab about television every week, I'm on Chats the Television podcast. Again, that can be found on podcast platforms as Peaks Chats, C-H-A-T-Z, the television podcast. It's on Spotify, on iTunes. We're pretty much everywhere that we can be. And we're talking Twin Peaks right now. We just started season 3, which is called Twin Peaks: The Return. It's really weird and creative and exciting. We have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/chatspod, C-H-A-T-Z-P-O-D, once again. And we have a plug zone over there if you want to hear more stuff. But I'm not really big on social media, so I don't have anything personal other than that to plug.
Okay. So we'll find you on Spotify and iTunes and all those good platforms.
Yes, indeed.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Alan. Come back on the show anytime and go check out Alan's podcast, everybody. It is awesome. He's a huge Twin Peaks fan and very knowledgeable about the subject. So thank you so much for joining us. And Alan, hope to see you again soon.
You as well, Liz. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right.